Year. How's everyone doing? All right, we're a little slow in the new year. We doing all right? All right, I saw a couple head nods. Everyone else, I guess you're slowly getting into whatever you're getting into this year. A couple of things here. So the way we do membership at Awaken is we renew it on an annual basis. And part of the reason why we do that is because we want you to, when you start a new year, when we start a new year together, for you to consciously make a decision that this is the place that I need to be at. This is the place that I am committing myself to. This is the tribe. This is my group that I am on the journey with. So we have on the back table a couple of our forms, our membership forms, and if that's you this morning, you're like, this is where I need to be at for this year. This is going to be my tribe. I'm going to roll deep with this crew this year in 2018. Then I would love for you to fill one of those out. Now, if you're new or maybe you haven't heard about membership before, no worries, because we're going to talk about it next week. How's that? It's like a cliffhanger. To be continued next week. So we're going to talk about that next week. Why does it matter here at Awaken? Why do we even do it this way? And what does it even mean to be a member? What does it even mean to be on the journey with us here at Awaken? So that'll be next week. And also, mark your calendars for January the 21st, because that is going to be our annual meeting. And you are not going to want to miss this, because immediately following our service, we're going to be talking even more about Awaken. We're going to give a financial update. It's through your support that we are able to keep going. So we're going to talk a little bit about where your support, where it goes towards, and how we steward the finances that we've been given, that you so graciously give to support Awaken. We'll give a ministry update, a little bit about where we've been in 2017, and then a couple of goals, a couple of places that we are hoping to head, places where we are going together, because we're going places. If you just stop a minute and look around, we are going places together. That is my son. He wants to go as quick as he can. Yeah, so I remember when I started this, there was like 5 people for about a year. So if you look around, we've come a long way from that. So I am thrilled and I am so excited about 2018 and where we are heading together and what is in store for us. And there's always an element of surprise, of mystery as well, because you can't control everything. So what's 2018 going to bring? I have no idea. But what I do know is that you are in for a treat this morning. A couple of weeks ago, I started planning out what 2018 is going to look like and how we're going to start the year. And I thought, why don't we start the year by having a surprise guest who you all know well, and if you don't, you should, come up and talk a little bit about her journey and give you a different perspective on Awaken, because you hear me week after week, so you hear my perspective, but what would it be like to hear the perspective of my wife and get to hear her journey? Because I started Awaken before we were even dating, and so she had to make a decision if she was going to even come and be a part of this crazy endeavor that I was embarking upon. And so I am so excited to have Steph come up this morning, and Jeff Haig, my great friend, who you all know as well, he's going to be interviewing Steph. And so they come up with a couple of great, brilliant questions. And what we're going to do as well, on the back table, there are some slips of paper and there are pens. And if you have a question for Steph, a burning question that you want to ask her, maybe you already do, or maybe something comes up as she's talking, just feel free to walk to the back, write that question down on a piece of paper. There's a printer box that we use for our kids sign-in, and is doing double duty this morning as our basket to collect all these questions. So feel free, put that back there, and hopefully we have some time at the end, and we'll take some of your questions, and we will grill her. So with that, is that a good intro? So I'm so excited. You're in for a treat this morning. So to hear her, and I know she's been working hard on what she wants to say, and I am just over the moon, the fact that she's going to be up here this morning. So with that, Steph and Jeff.
Wow. So, real quick, One of the things that I love about the Bible, whether you believe it, whether you read it, whether you even believe in God, is that the Bible from cover to cover is a story of different people's journey and their interaction with God and God's interaction with them. And everybody has a journey. Everybody has a story. We have a story. Each of you has a story. And that's why it's so awesome today to be able to hear Steph's story. So we've got some questions to ask her, and we'll listen for her answers. So let's start with why did you even want to be up here to be interviewed today?
Yeah. So Dave is always up here, right, every week, and you guys get to hear his sermons, and you kind of get a sense of who he is through those sermons. And I kind of took a backseat for a while, but I felt like it was just time for everyone to kind of get a sense of who I am through my story. And just like he said, everyone has a story. And I just wanted to share mine with you so that you could get a glimpse. Some people know me really well. Others, maybe this is the first time you're seeing me. So I just wanted to share with you today. Felt like it was time.
All right. So you dance with the New York Ballet. So how long were you there? What was your experience like there?
I mean, it was a great experience. 10 years with New York City Ballet. It was 6 days a week. It was about clocking in 65 hours a week. I learned over 90 ballets, so you have, like, choreography, like, swirling in your head all day long, different ballets. And then every night I would dance for roughly 2,500 people. So this is actually more nerve-wracking talking to you guys. So, you know, people have a sense of, you know, what the ballet is, and you think of like the tutu and the tiara and all this stuff. So I just felt like it was easier to kind of explain the ballet and what it was in pictures as well. But, it's a pretty cutthroat, extremely stressful environment. Generations past, you would hear stories of how dancers would sabotage other dancers' performances by, you know, hiding their pointe shoes or something. And it sounds like catty and, you know, whatever, but it actually was something that, you know, people actually did, and because they wanted that part. It's, you would do anything to get that role, you know, and sometimes people would stoop pretty low to get a role and to have that trajectory of this amazing prima ballerina career, right? So this is a picture to show, you know, the hair is done. This is a photo by Henry Lutweiler. He did like a whole book of ballet pictures, but that's just to show, that's what people think of a ballerina. Like, look at how pretty those pointe shoes are. There's no dirt on them at all, right? The hair is done, the makeup is done. But really, it's a little different. So if you flip to the next one, so that is the real deal, okay? So there's the pretty pointe shoe. It's a little bit, you know, mangled, but that's a pretty pointe shoe. But then on the last, juxtaposed with this really gnarly-looking foot, right? Look at that toe. That's seen better days. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work. Most people, half the people in the company on a given day were injured, you know? I can do the next ones to explain something else. So here is our class. We would do a class every morning. And there's this unspoken thing in the ballet. It's an unspoken rule where you're not supposed to show emotion because that shows weakness. And then they don't trust you, you know? And then you won't be anybody famous, right? You won't be able to get to do the roles that you want to do. So, okay, so my friend right here, the one that's like, you know, right front and center, he's actually a goofball, but he would not show that in the classroom. The one to the left is our boss, and I thought that was a good picture to show because really what every dancer thought in New York City Ballet is that one man controls your whole career. If he doesn't like you, oh well, you don't get to become what you want to become, right? So it was a lot of pressure, tons of pressure. The next one. So these ones, this is just showing how little time we had. They're getting ready for a performance. You have to basically eat your food while she's doing a show that night too, but she wants to eat something real quick. You're supposed to sew new pointe shoes. You got to do your hair. You got to do your makeup. Nobody does that stuff for you. You got to get warmed up, and then you have to be ready to go for the show, go over the choreography. So it was like constant energy, keep going, no rest time. Everybody's pretty much exhausted, right? So here's a few other pictures of intensity and exhaustion. That's backstage. People are just hydrating, very intense. And there is a dress rehearsal. She's backstage on a bar trying to catch a few Z's. So that's really what it's like. But, you know, I really had a good time, but it was a lot to deal with in the beginning. You know, you get in as like a 17-year-old. Most people in, 17 are still in high school, right? You're learning about life, and then you get into this company, and there's all this new information that you're being bombarded with, and you don't know how to process it because it's happening so fast, and you're still a kid, basically. So I needed some help, really.
Wow. So this was like hello? This was like full time. This is like a full time job for you.
It was full time. It's a job. Yeah, you got a paycheck, but you know you're really trying to learn the ropes at such a young age, and nobody is helping you. You know, so yeah.
Yeah, 6 days a week, 65 hours a week is a lot. Wow.
Yes.
So being in the ballet, how did that challenge your view of God? Your relationship with God?
So what happened, I mean, before I moved to New York, I lived in Pittsburgh, and I really had a great childhood. I, you know, went to this amazing church, had this youth group full of support, all the friends believed the same thing as I did, you know. It never was really challenged. My faith was never challenged. Not to say anything bad about that, but that is what it was. Then I moved to New York, and, you know, Pittsburgh is not as much of a diverse place, you know. So I'm in New York, and I'm like, what is this? What is that? Getting bombarded with all this new information, and I needed to learn how to process that. And, I didn't even know what a Jewish holiday was. Like, we got off for Rosh Hashanah, you know. In Pennsylvania, we got off for the first day of hunting season. So that's how different it was. Shout out to all my Pennsylvania friends. You know, so it was very different. And I felt like I needed a faith that was relevant for what I was going through. Maybe the faith that I had before in Pittsburgh would have been fine, would have been just fine. But now, moving to New York, I felt overwhelmed. I felt extremely lonely, honestly, because I didn't have those friends anymore that I could just bounce off, you know, ideas and that kind of thing with. So I really, really felt lonely. Even though my family was there, I just really needed to dive into this thing for myself and claim my faith as my own. And so I began to, you know, read the Bible more and kind of ask more questions and just like mull it over in my head so that when I went into this, you know, ballet world, I could kind of have more of an anchor, you know, instead of just feeling like the waters were gonna come over me and I was gonna crash down. I mean, people in the ballet would be plucking out their eyebrows and hair, and they would be, you know, eating disorders. You know, they would be like starving themselves because there was no control. You had this one guy, this one boss, you know, basically deciding your future, and people didn't know how to deal with that, honestly. So I would start to search, and you know, naturally, as you begin to, read the Bible and have these questions, it kind of naturally would flow out of me. And so I would talk to my friends about it. And we had this like sort of understanding, even if they weren't Christian, they wouldn't call themselves Christians, they still wanted to talk about it because it's interesting stuff. It's like talking about politics, you know, it's interesting. It can get heated. It can, you know, whatever. So there was this back and forth banter. And rapport. And so we would talk about things. And one day after class, my friends were like, you know what, this is very interesting stuff. Maybe you should think about starting a Bible study. I would go. And then another person was like, I would definitely go too. I would go. And so I was kind of, you know, now I had this question, like, okay, should I start this thing?
So from that point, you apparently started it. Why did you start it, though? What was your reason for doing it, and what was your goal?
Well, one of the goals was, you know, I wanted to learn more about the Bible, and we had lots of questions, and I wanted to experience more of Jesus, and what did that really look like? And so did my friends. And so I wanted to create an open space where people felt no judgment. They could come and feel like it was safe, like the safe haven. We had it at my apartment. And we could talk about things that were our struggles, you know, things that we were dealing with in the ballet, so that we could actually go into the ballet and feel confident in what we were doing and dance. So one of the things was, you know, the environment in the ballet can be toxic, just like I explained before. And one of the goals was to kind of change that. So instead of having this stoic face and not showing emotion because that's weakness, we wanted to change that and say, you know what, it's okay to show weakness. You know, it doesn't mean that you're any less of a person. We can dance and show emotion because that's who we are. We're human, you know? Usually if somebody was like crying in the back, it was so like, oh my gosh, why is she crying? But we would go up to them and say like, hey, what's going on? You know, and actually open that up. If one of the big things when you first get in, you are like so afraid, but you know not to show it, but you're 17. So you go into this environment, no one's helping you out. You don't have a mentor. They don't do that there. But we wanted to change that. We were like, this is not right. People coming into the ballet are so freaked out, so afraid. And so we would end up starting to take them aside. Hey, listen, this is how you communicate with the ballet master. This is what you need to do. You need to go down to if you're really having trouble because you can't understand the choreography, go downstairs, go to the video room, you know, prepare yourself first so that when you get into that studio, you needed these like little, you know, things to tell people so that they felt like they were, you know, ready to be able to have this good career. But the difference was a lot of people didn't want to do that because the new person coming in meant competition. It meant that this girl could actually be auditioning for the same role as me, and I'm helping her? Why do I want to help her? I want that role, you know? So it ended up being like we had to kind of push ourselves aside a little bit and say, you know what, this isn't right. We can help them with the choreography, and may the best man win at the end, you know? So that's kind of one of the things that we ended up doing. The last goal I would say was it's a lot of pressure to have this one man, you know, in charge of your whole career. So as cheesy as this sounds, we would kind of talk about what if Jesus was in the audience? What if instead of dancing for this man, because we want this man to like see us as this prima ballerina, maybe we should just have pretend, you know, Jesus was in the audience, and that's who we're dancing for. We dance for ourselves, and we dance for him. And so we kind of, like, had that vision. And when you have, like, you change your perspective, and you have that vision, it gave you this inner confidence. You didn't have this, like, oh my gosh, everything's out of my control. It changed when we put our eyes on that perspective. And it helped us kind of, instead of having everyone critique ourselves all the time with all the ballets and, you know, everybody was critiquing you at all times. You kind of could finally say, you know, the verse. Okay, there's one verse called that says, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, how can you love your neighbor if you don't love yourself? And when you're being critiqued all the time, you're really used to critiquing yourself, right? So we try that goal. I mean, this was constant. When we were in the Bible study, we talk about this all the time. How can we love ourselves? How can we be confident in ourselves so that we can actually go to the ballet and support others? So these were the goals. We wanted to change that atmosphere. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, so it was a lot. And it was daily. You know, like every day, the culture was so strong there to be so cutthroat that you would fail all the time. And then you'd be like, oh, why'd I do that, you know? And then you would have to regroup and say, no, I'm going to do this. So it was a constant, it wasn't just like a, yeah, we got this. It was a intentional thing where you had to say, I'm not going to act that way.
So constantly challenging your self-image, yeah, your view of yourself, mm-hmm, and things like that. Mm-hmm. So at some point along the way, you met Dave.
Yep.
So talk to us a little bit about how you guys met, what your journey was, where that was concerned. You guys meeting, and obviously meeting Dave,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure you had some kind of an idea at some point in the beginning of his vision to start Awaken and yeah. where he was heading. What was your experience like going through that, and how'd you come to some of the decisions you came to?
Yeah, so when I first met Dave, he told me a little bit about what his vision was, and it was very similar in that he really wanted to have this open environment where people could come in, and it's like a non-judgmental zone, basically, for people to talk about their doubts and their struggles, and that we don't always have the right answers. Maybe we just need to listen and just, like, you know, put an arm around each other instead of, like, trying to say something that doesn't really help, something rehearsed, you know? So Dave started it without me at first, so I started coming, and I realized, wow, this is something I could be on board with. But at the time, I didn't like how the Bible study ended. There were some things that were really hurtful. Some of my friends, like, really hurt me, and I really felt abandoned. I felt taken advantage of. And it left a pretty deep wound in me. I actually ended up stopping the Bible study because I didn't think it was worth it to continue. It almost felt like a failure, honestly. And the wound was very fresh. So when I met Dave, I knew that if I was going to continue with him, that wound could possibly get bigger and could potentially happen again. And, you know, I was worried about that because it was really hard for me to, I didn't even want to go to church at that point. I felt like I needed some time away. I had told my pastors that I didn't want to, like, you know, be there for a little bit. And so when I met him, we kept on having these conversations, you know, basically we were getting serious, and I kept on telling him, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if I want to start this church with you, though. And he was like, you really need to make that decision. You know, I want to be with you, but this is what I feel called to do. And what happened was he was at two places. He was a youth pastor at one church, and he was starting this other church, you know, Awaken, in his apartment at the time. So he was speaking at this big church, and I decided to come with him, sitting in the audience. And while he was speaking, I had, like, this weird experience where I really felt like a force, like, and I believe it was the Holy Spirit, convicting me, saying, like, basically what I felt was, man, shame on me for holding him back because I want to be with him and I don't want to start this church right now. Shame on me because he has a dream and he has an anointing to do this for a time. I don't know how long, but I knew he had an anointing on him. And it was hard for me because I was like, I don't want to do this right now. Like, I have a wound. And at that point, I was like, wow, I have to support him. I'm supposed to do this with him. So I pulled him aside and I said, you know, I really want to support you more. I'm gonna be there for you, but with one caveat. And the caveat was, I don't want to be up in the front. I will be in the behind the scenes. I will, you know, set up with you every morning. I will do what you need me to do, but I'm not going to get too close to people yet. I need time to heal, and I want to recognize that wound, and I needed to know that it was going to heal. And I said, you know, I feel like pastors' wives are always in the front doing worship or doing, you know, a Bible study here, a Bible study there. And I said, I'm just not going to do that. And I don't want you to have an expectation of me. And he said, I never really had that expectation. And I was like, oh, okay. So it really wasn't a big deal anyways, but, you know, for me it was, because I didn't know what he expected of me. So we started that, and he started to do his sermons, and he got better and better, I felt, I got to see. And a few of them were actually on forgiveness. And I was thinking, you know, in my seat, I realized, I had this revelation that I felt, that forgiveness comes in layers. You're not going to, I hate the expression forgive and forget, because Forgiveness doesn't happen one time. Forgiveness happens in layers depending on how deep the wound is, right? If it's down to the bone, you're not going to forgive one time and it's fine, right? You're going to be reminded of these situations as you come into contact with people, situations, and it's going to remind you of that time that you got hurt, and it's like it's going to open that scab again, right? So I needed the time to be able to recognize it and to be able to say, okay, I'm going to forgive. There's a verse that I think it's in Matthew, I'm not sure, but Peter says, how many times should we forgive? 7 times? To Jesus. And Jesus says, no, 70 times 7. Didn't mean really 70 times 7, do the multiplication. It meant that it's like a process. You have to continue to forgive even in the one situation where you got hurt. It's going to remind you of those situations, and you're going to have to be faced with it right there again, and you have to actually say, no, I choose to forgive again. I choose to forgive again. And that's what I felt like I had to do. And I feel like I'm continuing to do that still. So honestly, the thing that I was so afraid about being starting this thing with him and getting hurt again was what helped me continue to heal. Because being here, surrounded around people and having that opportunity to forgive was the very thing that I actually needed to do. And you can't do it without people because you're not going to be in those situations where you need to forgive. It's like either you don't come to church or you don't surround yourself around people, this community. Church is a community. And you're not surrounded around people that could potentially hurt you, then you're not going to be able to forgive. You don't need to. You can just sit at home and, you know, sit there and feel protected. But if you really want to thrive, and I knew I wanted to thrive and get over this, that I needed to be in contact with people, even if it could happen again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So how do you feel your vision of the Bible study when you were in the ballet and the vision here at Awaken coincides with each other?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the church that I grew up with, it's like, we were surrounded by Christians. Christians would come in. There was never anybody that was searching, really. We wanted it to be a community where maybe people come from all different backgrounds, all different religions, and they can come here and find a starting point. You know, we're all at this level and we're going to continue to grow together at the same level. Everybody's at different levels. And because of your past or whatever, where your background. And we wanted everyone to feel welcome to experience Jesus in a fresh way, to experience him that he's alive, you know, instead of this, okay, let's just talk about the Bible or let's, you know, talk about X, Y, and Z and how to become a good Christian. We really wanted people to be able to experience who Jesus really was. And we didn't want it to be a judgmental zone. Really.
So I know you shared a lot here. And it's, you know, when you talk about a 20 or 30 minute time, yeah. You know, things that you just shared went on over 10,
oh my goodness. Yeah.
15 years.
15 years, yeah.
I mean, so you're condensing a whole lot. And it was interesting. By the way, again, if anybody has a question anonymously, you don't even have to put your name, address or phone number in the box in the back, and anything you just feel like maybe you want to ask Steph while she's up here. But so I mean, I'm listening to you, and I can only imagine what you said was when you're in the ballet, you don't show emotion,
right?
Because showing emotion means you're weak.
Yeah.
You're not strong enough to maintain and hold your emotions, right? So for a lot of us, I mean, we haven't been in the ballet, but maybe we grew up like that under parents who didn't want, you know, don't cry or don't show emotion or whatever that is. And so sometimes we tend to get stunted, you know, our emotional growth gets stunted a bit. So the fact that you're here actually sharing and expressing about emotions when you went through such a long experience not being able to do that, can you talk for a minute how that might feel for you?
Not having emotions?
Or having them.
Yeah, I mean, I felt very, when you go to the ballet, and there's some people that, you know, aren't aware, right? You're looking at yourself in the mirror all day long, and you're critiquing your body. So you're not even looking at your face, honestly. You're looking at how your arms are supposed to be. Am I in a fifth position that's really nice and tight? You're thinking about all this stuff, right? You're not thinking about the emotions and what you're actually experiencing inside because you're so focused, intense. I remember being in the studio and going on the side watching people dance and looking at the faces, and everybody was just like looking like stoic, looking at their bodies, looking at this area, you know, trying to figure out how to do the movement. And I remember just being like, this is not right. This is, we need to be able to like be free. Like I felt like everybody was kind of like in jail or something. So having that expression to be able to feel free and feel supported by everyone was very different. And I felt like you needed to have those emotions. You can't just, you're not going to be able to help anyone or to relate to anyone if you don't have emotions. You know, everybody feels like maybe the best leaders are the ones that are very, you know, I have everything together. I have, you know, let me just tell you what to do and then you'll feel good. You'll be good. But it's really, honestly, the best leaders are the ones that show weakness.
And show emotion.
Show emotion.
Yeah, because people can feel safe around them,
yeah.
Right? Comfortable.
Yeah.
So what's our time, by the way? We got 5 minutes? Okay. Do you have a question? Sure, yeah.
I was just curious about the man that you said had so much control.
Yeah.
Did he notice that some of the dancers were sort of, you know, showing a little bit more? And did that impact him to change going forward in his reign?
No, because we, you know, we didn't have a lot of interaction with him. He would come to watch the... basically the end rehearsal. So he wasn't really in the, like he wasn't there at all times. It was more at the very end. I think there were things that he saw. There were a few times when we would do this really difficult ballet, eight of us. And instead of just not looking at each other and doing the choreography, we would backstage before it happened, we would like do this thing where we would be in a circle and we would like slap each other's hands like this and get really riled up. That just didn't happen back then when he was a dancer. So there were certain things where we were much more of a group and supportive that he saw, I'm sure. But he was concerned with, you know, raising other dancers up. But I will say that some of the other ballet masters did notice. Yeah, and there was one ballet mistress that was very, very cold, and she had a lot of situations that kind of made her perspective change, and I had a few conversations with her to explain myself, because there was one situation where, because I was showing more emotion, she thought I wasn't taking it seriously, and we did not have a good relationship. So I had to actually go to the office to explain to her, listen, it does not mean that I am any less committed and that I don't want, you know, this amazing career. It's just, this is who I am. I am happy. I want to experience joy here. And just because I laugh doesn't mean I'm, you know, not taking it seriously. And after that, we were like very, very close and she understood me. But that was the thing. It was like, dancers would come in and didn't even understand how to communicate because they were like 16, 17 years old. So we would help these dancers. Listen, you need to communicate to the ballet masters how you're feeling, and that just never happened back then. So things like that.
Well, we have a question for you. Did anyone advise you both to date for at least a year, or did you just know sooner than a year that Dave was the one for you? Da-na-na-na. Did anyone advise you both to date for at least a year, or did you just know sooner than a year that Dave was the one for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you'd ask Dave, he would say he knew, like, in 3 months. But for me, it took a little bit longer, but I hadn't dated anyone in a really long time. And so when I met him, he was, like, basically, I felt like the whole package. And so, no one advised us to, like, date for this amount of time, but I just knew that we were a good fit for each other.
Do you remember how long into it did you know?
Oh, gosh. He knew 3 months. I knew 5 months, maybe? Yeah. It was a short period, though, that we dated. So some people were worried.
Worry no more. In what way do you make God a priority every day?
I feel like I really... There have been some times where, you know, having a baby, it, like, takes all of your energy and all of your time. But I feel like it's the way I treat people that I experience God the most. Because you're, like, put in so many situations where you just, like, want to rip someone a new one. You know, you're like, listen, this is how it is. You know, you really want to, like, say what you really feel, right? And I feel like by putting God as a priority, it's how he wants me to treat others. I think that was his whole mission. He wanted us to treat others with love, honestly. I think that's really what he was trying to get at, because how hard is it? It's so hard sometimes. And at least for me, that's my struggle sometimes. And so I feel like by putting God forward and trying to love people is how I experience God the most.
What traditions will you maintain for Reese and your next child?
Oh, next child, if there is another one. We'll see. I can't even imagine right now. You know, I've thought about this a lot, but tradition, well, even like raising him the right way, me and David have had a lot of discussions about it. We just really want him to experience God in his own unique way. Like sometimes when I first had him, I'd have these walks around our block, and I would pray to Jesus and say, you know, Lord, I really want him to have, like, I want to raise him right, but I don't want him to have the same kind of relationship that I have with you. I want him to have something so unique that I learn from him. And so that's what I'm really hoping, because I think it's people, like, when you talk to someone and you see their relationship with Jesus is so different than yours, and then you get a glimpse of another glimpse of how Jesus is. Like, I thought I knew who Jesus was, but no, like, then you talk to somebody else and you're like, whoa, Jesus is really like that too. So I'm really hoping that he can really teach me a lot too. But yeah, traditions, you know, I want to teach him about Jesus. I want to teach him about the Bible. And, you know, hopefully I can give him a starting point. Me and Dave can give him a starting point and he can run with it.
Fast runner too, maybe. Well, this has been awesome. I just want to say in the last week or two, just from getting together, I feel like I've gotten to know you a bunch more than before. And I'm sure being able to share part of your story here, you're giving people here a glimpse into your life and who you are. So in the coming days and weeks, you know, if you happen to have a question that maybe you weren't comfortable asking here or didn't have time to, talk to Stephanie, pull her aside, give her a call, shoot her an email or something. But this has been awesome, and it's been great getting to know you more through this. And, of course, Dave and I are always close, and so this has been a wonderful opportunity. And thanks for sharing your life.
Yeah,
this is awesome. So let's just take a minute and pray. So, Father, thanks so much again, because... Again, I don't know, when I look at your Bible, it's a story over and over again of a journey, people's journey in their lives, and and in their relationship with you and in your love quest to them. And so thank you today for Stephanie having the courage to come up here and share part of her story, part of her life with us, and to give us a glimpse. And I pray, God, that maybe none of us have been in the ballet like she has, but some of us may have felt in some ways how she felt going through some of her experience. So I pray, God, that your spirit and your strength would be with us in the coming days and months. In Jesus' name, amen.